Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio, Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, November 3rd, 2011. It is now 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio. We do invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496 with any questions, comments, or criticisms that you may have during this program, and don't be afraid, you will not be interrupting us at all. When you do call, remember, press the 1 key when you do want to ask your question so I'll know that that you're just not listening, because I get a host of telephone numbers on our board. And that indicates that you're hooked up to our program, but it does not indicate that you want to ask a question. So if you just want to listen, fine. Don't press the one. If you do, press the one, and I'll put you on, and we'll put you on the air. Okay, right now, let's see, where are we? I'm a little discombobulated this morning. I did everything right except without calling in the number, and I just got all screwed up. Okay. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 888-773-4496. You may also access this program through Blog Talk Radio number of 646-652-4620. Send us your emails anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, sutton-associates.net, and sign up. In his monthly newsletters and podcasts, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You will benefit by it. Don't wait until it's too late. Liberty Talk Radio broadcasts are archived and available from our website, but are also accessed via iTunes and Twitter under @LibertyJoe for your listening convenience. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Okay, I did all my obligatory stuff this morning. Good morning again. Folks, this morning we're going to have, come 7 o'clock, Jim Burns. And Jim Burns is a candidate for the president for the Libertarian Party. And we wish him luck. He will be with us this morning to discuss how libertarianism can improve the human condition, and every day I am experiencing that in one way, shape, or form. Recently, I had to help out a friend with giving some money, which I shouldn't have done, and this person is an absolute, right now, his life is an absolute mess, and that they're in an absolute mess because their whole family's in a mess, and the whole family's in a mess because there are ways out. There absolutely are ways out for them. And none of them are recognizing the fact that if they don't get their act together, they will starve to death. Now, I don't want anyone to starve to death. Don't get me wrong. It's a horrible way to go from what I understand. But they all, what socialism does, and a friend of mine said this very clearly yesterday when we were talking about it. What socialism does is it relegates everyone to the bottom of the heap. I mean, you're at the bottom of the class. You always relegate. You never bring yourself up. It'll always drag you down. And these people who rely on it and figure, well, I don't have to do it because if worse comes to worse, I can always get fill in the blank. You know, they stay where they are. And that is the problem with socialism or any sort of government program where you do not have to be accountable for it. Oh, you have to fill out a form maybe and, you know, show up at the office, and that's a struggle and that's about it. But anything else, you don't have to do. And you don't have to do anything, you stay exactly where you are. I don't know of anyone who has ever achieved anything from just being exactly where they are, doing nothing. Never happened. In fact, look at large corporations. If they can be very profitable, have the latest technology, have great products, good customer service, and if they stay exactly where they are, what happens? Right? Competition comes in, eats them alive, they go bankrupt. In fact, we were discussing this just the other day at Starbucks, where I was having my coffee, and we were talking about technology. I said, you know, I don't really get involved in investing in technology because I can't keep up with it. I don't know it well enough. And I said, I can listen to people giving me advice on technology, and that's about it. But I really don't know the first thing about it. Thank you. So I said, I do things I know a little bit more about. You know, I invest in things like oil, gas. I understand that, you put oil in your car, you know where it comes from, you can follow it. To me, it's a lot easier, Very volatile, but a lot easier. I said, I read an article not too long ago about Xerox. Xerox was the very first company that came out with a computerized office. In fact, they had a picture of it, and it looked like a very, very modern office, with the computer and the table and the whole bit. I mean, it was just looked like a modern day office. And this was like 25 years ago. And when it was presented to the board as the way of the future, and this is going to bring Xerox to just catapult it, the board was given a tour of the office and how it worked and whatever, and they all thought it was the most ridiculous thing in the world. And that set Xerox back 20 years. Now, they're still in business, yes, they're still making some very good products, and they're still profitable. But let me say, I invested in Xerox, and they went nowhere fast for 20 years. I can tell you that. First-hand experience. In fact, I lost a little bit of money. But that's when you stand still, that's what happens. What socialism does, when someone else will bail you out, you tend to stand still. You can never stand still. Now, I'm up at 5. I don't have to get up. I'm retired, semi-retired, or what do you want to call it? But I'm up at 5:30. I'm on the go. I don't do broadcast in the evening, except for Andy Sutton, the third Wednesday of every month, because that's when he can be on here, and I appreciate him being here. Because by the time 7, 8 o'clock at night comes by, I've had it. I mean, I'm washed out. My son's in a band. He says, oh, Dad, why don't you come listen to our band? We start at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I said, I'm in bed at that time. I can't take it anymore. I had a full day ahead of me, a full day before me. I cannot start it all up again. And I had that problem when I had my Sunday night broadcast. My point being, don't stand still. Charlie Stewart, a drummer, an anesthesiologist, actually, here in Tulsa. Hell of a nice guy. Damn good drummer, and very tolerant of my lousy drumming, by the way, sent me an email that I forwarded to a few people, but I wanted to read it on the air, and they talk about the Congressional Reform Act. I'm not sure if many people are familiar with this, but it makes so much sense. This proves the ignorance of the public and the tolerance we have for monarchies. We like monarchies. We like kings and queens and people telling us what to do. We love that stuff. We don't like freedom. We don't want to be free. We don't want our leaders to be – we don't want our leaders to work for us. We want to work for our leaders. We do want that, by the way. Don't kid yourself. That's what we want. And this proves it. He said, here's the Congressional Reform Act, by the way, which will never happen of 2011. He said, for Congress, no tenure, no pension. A congressman collects a salary – while in office, receives no pay whatsoever when they're out of office. Boy, wouldn't that be a kick? Congress, past, present, future, participates in Social Security or anything else that they anything they enact, that's what they participate in. They don't participate in any of the programs. None of the programs that they pass do they participate in. The bums. Congress can purchase their own retirement plan, just like all Americans do. Congress will no longer vote themselves a pay raise. Period. Great. Congress loses their current health care system, participates in the same health care system. They vote at the Congress. Voted at Congress, rather. And Congress must equally abide by all the laws they impose on all the American people. And all contracts with the past and present congressmen are void, effective January 1st, 2012. The American people did not make the contract with the congressman. They made it for themselves, and that's it. And it makes sense. I mean, there's nothing radical about this, but of course TV was like, what was a radical approach? No. They work for us. they enact something, they should abide by the same things we do. But that's not the way it works. They impose all sorts of stuff on us, and they're exempt on every one of them. Now, folks, that's got to tell you something about where we're going. And I don't like where we're going. You shouldn't like where we're going. It ain't pretty. I want to talk to you a little bit about a request that I had to speak to a junior ROTC class here in Tulsa. Now, that's strange. I mean, I've never spoken to an ROTC class. This is a junior ROTC class. And the teacher says, well, I'm going to get you in as soon as I can. I want you to speak to these. I said, I have no idea what to talk to these guys about. He says, you'll figure it out. He says, I know you. He says, you'll figure it out. And I thought about it. I said, really worried me. I said, I didn't want to say no. I said, it would be kind of neat speaking to ROTC. Because he goes, but what could I speak to him about? And I decided, I said, you know, I'm going to talk to them about a video that I saw one time that asked the question, you know, if you saw a train, trolley coming down a track, and for some reason you knew that it was out of control, the conductor, the driver, the engineer, you know, passed out for some reason, and it was careening down, and you saw it was going to hit four people. And you had a lever in your hand that you can take and move the trolley over to the sidecar and save the four people's lives. However, you would sacrifice the life of one person. What would you do? And it's a philosophical question, you know. And it's very interesting, the answers that you get. It's very fascinating, you know. In fact, I posed that to a group of people once. And most of them said that they would, you know, pull the lever. But he goes further. He goes, okay. He says, now, same situation. And he says, you're on the trestle viewing all this again. And again, you have you don't have the lever anymore. But there's a big, 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 gigantic guy standing right next to you. I mean, gigantic. I mean, he is so big and he's leaning over. And you know, if you just touched him, he would just fall over, right? And hit the tracks and stop the trolley. I know this is silly, but I mean, and stop the trolley, saving the four people. Would you do it? Right? Most people said, no, I wouldn't. And you look at it and you have this philosophical problem. You say, well, in one case, you pull the lever and you sacrifice one person's life. And the other one, you push, pull the guy, touch the guy, he fell over. You have to push him very hard. You have to touch him a little bit. Whoop! Being right over, right? Stops the trolley, saves the four people's lives. They say no. And it's just a very fascinating situation. But what I'm going to do to ROTC class is I'm going to ask them, what? Why are you joining? What's your mission? And I'm going to get answers like, you know, protect the freedom of the United States and, you know, blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. It's to obey orders. You have a job, and you're going to obey orders. Now, you're going to be somewhere, anywhere. It could be in the United States. It could be overseas. And you may have a screen, a computer screen in front of you, and there's a suspected terrorist somewhere. And you're given the orders to zero in on that house, put the coordinates in, press the button, and bingo, a rocket goes off, bomb goes off, or whatever, you know. Goes, lands someplace, right? And hopefully, you know, kills a terrorist. How we know it's a terrorist, I don't know. Yeah, but anyway, a suspected terrorist. Bingo, we take him out. But of course, there's always a little bit of collateral damage. Sometimes we don't take the terrorist out. And sometimes he wasn't a terrorist in the first place. But we wipe out a whole bunch of people, whole neighborhood, or whatever the case may be. But you're doing it because it's your job, right? And we say, oh, they would all agree. Yeah, well, I'm ordered to do it. I got to do it, you know. I said, fine. Now, you know for a fact... You know for a fact that your mother is in that house or next door. And you know for a fact when that bomb, even if the bomb hits that guy, there's a good chance your mother's going to die too. Would you do it? It's going to be interesting to see what kind of response I get from these young guys. Because the problem that I see is that these guys are going into the military. not giving a thought as to really what they're getting into and who they are truly serving. And say, just hold that thought, who they are truly serving, for station identification. Hold on a second.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. This morning we're talking about what you would do if you were, why you would join the military, and what you would do if asked to push a button that would launch a rocket onto a particular area. Anyway, just hypothetical questions, and why we join. And the problem is that we don't know why we join, and there is the big problem. We have been brainwashed since we, every one of us, that the U.S. is good and we do nothing but good. Nothing but good. We have never gotten up and said, boy, we bombed that country. Boy, was that a mistake. We got the wrong country. We should have been there in the first place. Damn, you know, we killed 180,000 people unnecessarily. Holy smoke, you know, and about 3 million were injured. Sorry about that. We have never done that. But yet we do that every year. We do it every year. And in fact, we do it in spades every year. In fact, we're doing it every day. But we're not taught that. What are we taught? We're taught that we're good, we're policing the world for the good of the world. My father came from Italy. He came from Italy, you know, pre-World War II, the whole bit, and everything, you know. And he was a good man, a very, very good man, hardworking, helped everybody, you know. And of course, he had certain, his mindset was so totally different. It was a European mindset during a time when, you know, Europe was all fractionated and they were fighting each other and whatever, and they all hated each other. And they still do, by the way. But anyway, so his thought process was so much different than mine, you know. And he used to complain that the British helped the Ethiopians get rid of the Italian troops in Ethiopia. And I said, Pop, you had no right being. That's not your country. But he said, look at all the good we did. He said, we built roads, we built hospitals, we built schools. You know, it's the same thing we're saying. Oh, I know, but look at all the good what we're doing. You know, we're building roads, we build schools. Look what we're, and then they show pictures of soldiers, you know, giving candy and to children and helping them out. Well, we don't belong there in the first place. Why don't we show pictures of us dropping a bomb and killing a few dozen kids just by accident? But you know, we only paint what's good. So we go into this thing. We're in school. We don't know what we want to do. Our school systems are total failure as far as preparing us for real life. Total failure. Every one of them. Every one of them. So they go in. They go, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, I can join this thing. I get a uniform. I march around and this and that. And I get a job. And then I can go into the army and learn electronics free. I get screen, you know, this is what they're taught. And, you know, and do some good for the world. You know, this is how bad our school system is. And I include colleges. I was watching a college football game the other day with somebody. I very rarely do this. I don't watch college football, but I just happen to build a house and we watch it. And these guys are pros. I said, you know, the schools are a fraud. I said, these guys are almost as good as pro football players. I said, there's millions and millions and millions of dollars on every game. I said, why don't they have a course in school football? You go to the University of Oklahoma, you can get a degree in football. And be honest about it. Those have physical education. That is stupid. You know, bouncy, bally. No, you're going to get a course in football. And if you don't do well in football, you fail. You're out. You want to play soccer? You get a course in soccer. Why not be honest about it? And the same thing in school. Why in high school do you have to take 4 years of American history? Why? First of all, it's not American history. It's comic book history. It's changed every year. depending on who's in the administration and what they want to say. It makes us stupid. We hate going to school. But what if a kid has a propensity to be a football player? And he's really, really, really good. He's got the right body structure. He's got the he just got the desire to become – he wants to be an NFL player. He would rather die than not be an NFL player. Why not make him go to school? You major in football. In high school, college, go right into the NFL. If he doesn't make it, that's it. They say, well, he can't get a job with a degree in football. Well, they can't get a job right now with the stupid degrees they have now. What kind of degree do they have now? Physical ed? Well, to get a job at a school with physical ed. Well, you think you need a degree in physical education to be a teacher in phys ed? Come on. You know, 3 laps around the track and let's make it quick. Hustle. Yeah, I need a degree in that. So why not call it the way it is? Why not do what we say we're going to do? So, but this is so much more important because when kids go to school, if a kid has a propensity to, I don't care, play the piano. This kid loves to play the piano. Why not, instead of going through all 4 years of garbage, and it's all garbage, why don't they have, why doesn't he go to piano school? And have him play piano playing school. And it doesn't even have to be a school. It can just be a piano teacher. If he knows how to read, he knows how to write, and he's doing what he loves, and he does it well, what else is there? You mean because he doesn't know Algebra 101? Who cares? I don't know algebra. I don't remember Algebra 101. I can't tell you a thing about it. But if he would need it, if he reads, and he's motivated to do the things that he loves to do, he will learn that on his own. And if he wanted to know, you could send him to school. Say, I want to send my son to school or my daughter to school to learn algebra. Fine, no problem. He's motivated to go to that school to learn algebra, and he will learn it. And he will remember it, or she will remember it. But we put all these kids in one box called a classroom, and all different, actually, everyone is totally different, except for maybe about age, you know. And we're expected to memorize all the same crap and know the same garbage when very few of them, if any of them, have any interest in it and will do anything for them in the future. Think of the stupidity of the whole thing. Our whole school system, the whole logic of our school system is gone. If a kid likes to read comic books, read comic books. Read every single... Isn't it better they read comic books all day than they come home and not do their homework? Then they stay in a classroom and be disruptive because they're bored, they hate it? Read comic books all day. Maybe the kid will be a comic book expert. He'll be a trader in comic books. I don't know what they do with comic books today. Maybe he'll be an artist. A cartoon artist, whatever they call those guys. But they'll be doing something that is, in fact, productive. Something that makes them feel good. Something that they can contribute to society because they are good in what they do. We produce kids who can do practically nothing. So junior ROTC sounds good to me. You see my point? It just sounds so damn good. It gives them direction. I don't have to decide. They will decide for me, and at the same time, I will be protecting my country. You know, God bless America. When are we going to wake up to the fact that the whole system is wrong? It's not just, you know, we have these people on Wall Street, and I applaud them, but their anger is directed all in the wrong place. I agree with Peter Schiff, that investment guy. You know, he went on Wall Street. He says, I'm the 1%. Not the 90%. He says, I'm the 1%. Let's talk. I love that. I'm the 1%, let's talk. And he's trying to explain to them that it's not Wall Street that they should be protesting against. It's Washington, because Washington sort of paid Wall Street to do what they did. I mean, if you want to get rid of organized crime, do you get rid of the runner? Do you get rid of the guy who, who just hangs out, the guy who protects them? No, you want to get the head guy. know, you get rid of the guy in the bottom, what happens? Another guy takes his place. You don't solve any problem. We have to go to the root cause, and the root cause is Washington. I've always maintained that. I've said this on the program as well. Anyway, I've ranted enough about that. I've ranted about our school system enough that I think everyone's gotten the point. And I don't know why it's so difficult for people to see. What is really fascinating to me is that whenever I bring up the school system to a teacher, and I say, you know, I have a problem with school system. Can you explain something? They never want to talk about it. They get angry because they can't think. You see, they are a product of being in a box, passing a test because they memorized some crap. All right. Now they don't know what they have no skill, no skill whatsoever. None. They can't do squat. So what do? They teach. And then you say, hey, I got a problem with this school system. How does this work? They get angry. At the dog park the other day, I met this one fella. Name is Mike. And he was a school teacher. He was the first guy. He felt the same way I did. He said, absolutely right. He said, you're kidding me. He said, you're first one. You're not going to punch me in the nose? He says, no, you're right. He says, it's horrible. He says, I have these kids. He says, most of the kids I have are underprivileged kids. And he says, at least I feel like I'm taking them off the street and giving them some direction. And he says, that's why I want you to talk to them. Me? I said, me? You want me to talk to them, Mike? I said, get out of here. I don't talk to ROTC classes. I don't know anything about ROTC. He says, you're coming to my class. You don't have a choice. I said, all right, I'll talk to them. I have no idea what I'm going to talk to them about, but I decided what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask them if they would kill their mother or father or sister or brother. And if they said no, I said, how do you push the button? They have to explain it to me. They're going to have to really explain that to me. Now, obviously, you don't have that situation if you have a defensive defensive force here in the United States, and you're sitting here waiting, and there's troops coming at you, you know, with guns and rifles and tanks and stuff, and you're firing back. You don't have to worry about hitting your mother or your father, your sister, your brother. See? Totally different. Offensive versus defensive. Very, very interesting. And I think we should give a lot of thought to our school system as to whether or not it should exist in the first place, which I don't think it should exist. Schools don't do us any good. Now, if you want to be an engineer, then go to engineering school. I have no problem with that. You want to be a chemical engineer? Go to chemical engineering school. You want to become an accountant, CPA? Good. Go to accounting school. I have no problem with that. Don't get me wrong. I have no problem with that. I'm talking about general education for years and years and years of indoctrination of crap with no direction whatsoever, being taught by people with well-meaning intentions that have no idea what they're doing. Good people have no idea what they're doing. That's unfortunate. You know, we only have about a minute and a half before it's 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, Jim Burns should be on. He should be calling in. And I'm going to see if I can find his... I don't know his number. And let's see if I can find his number. Okay, I got his number. He's on the... In fact, he's on the air now. I think we'll take him... First, we'll stop for station identification, and then we'll take Jim Burns. Okay. Hold on, folks.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Good morning, folks. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We will have on the air in a few seconds Jim Burns. He's a candidate for president of the Libertarian Party. He'll be talking about how libertarianism can improve the human condition, something that I abide by and I believe in 100%. And here's Jim Burns.
Hello, Jim. Joe.
Good morning, Jim. Welcome back to Liberty Talk Radio. How are you?
I'm just fine, sir. How are you today?
Fine. You have a wonderful radio voice. I'd love to buy it.
Well, you know, I'd sell it cheap.
Okay. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being part of our show this morning. I see that you've been listening in since... have you been listening in since 6:30?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you have. Okay. Well,
I've enjoyed your I've enjoyed your monologue.
Okay.
Very entertaining.
Thank you. Well, may I ask you, did you agree or disagree?
Oh, you're a libertarian. I agree with you.
Okay. All right.
At least most of the time, anyway.
Well, whenever you disagree with me, please let me know, because that's what I thrive on disagreement, you know. That's why I'm married to my wife so long. Only joking. Jim, this morning, what would you like to talk about?
Well, there's several things. I've been thinking about a serious problem that we have. And it goes way back to 1776, the Declaration of Independence. I think Thomas Jefferson messed up just a little bit. Let me see if I can explain it to you. He said, the second paragraph, he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Now, herein lies the problem, because there's two definitions, at least two definitions, of what it means to be created equal. On the one hand, there's one that equality meaning equal outcome. From this one, we get such things as from each according to his ability, to each according to his need.
Right.
We also get the social justice idea. You know, the idea that that people ought to be, we ought to have a level playing field, that everybody ought to have a you know, have the same opportunities, as opposed to the other version of what that means, and that's equality of rights under the law. In other words, while it's true that we're not all equal, in other words, some people are tall, some people are short, some people are smart, some people aren't so smart, some people have good physical ability, some people don't, you know, that sort of thing. But all of them, no matter what their physical capabilities or what their situation in life is, should be treated equally by the law. And from those two different philosophies, we have two different results. The first one being the Soviet style, where you have, you know, as I said, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. What that leads you to is, you know, mass starvation and killing people by the tens of millions. And the other side, what you have is peace, prosperity, and progress. And now, this is not to say that, you know, what happened was Thomas Jefferson sold me on this idea, the second idea, but this is not to say that our system is perfect. It is not perfect. Right from the beginning, we didn't have equality of rights under the law. You know, there was slavery. You know, that's not equality of rights under the law. The way that the United States government treated women and the Native Americans and the Chinese, the Japanese, and, you know, the United States government has continually violated the rights of people. But nevertheless, the principle, the shining light, has always been the ideal of equality of rights under the law. And I think that this is something to keep in mind when we look at the current situation that we're facing. For example, President Obama is talking about he wants to distribute the wealth. What he's talking about is from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. And the problem is that what that leads you to is poverty. There's a German word, I've just recently learned it, it's Schadenfreude. And what that means is that everybody gets brought down, and it's they're bringing people, they not only don't they... it's not that they want what everybody has. They want to make everybody equal. And the only way to do that is to make them equal at a lower rate.
Right.
I hope that hasn't bored you too much, Joe.
No, it hasn't. It's a problem that we face every day. And it's unfortunate that the general population does not understand that. The Occupy Wall Street globally, so to speak, do not understand that. And they keep on...
Can I put something in here, Joe?
Sure.
I've heard something that's just really got me. You know, they're talking about the 99%?
Right.
You know, the thing about it is, they're part of the 1%. You know that if you make more than $30,000 a year, you're part of the 1% worldwide. And many of the people who are demonstrating make more than $30,000 a year.
That's an excellent
Or at point. Least their parents do.
Right.
So what they're actually doing is they're demonstrating against themselves.
Right.
Now, just like the American, there was two revolutions in the 1700s. One was the American Revolution and the other one was the French Revolution. The first revolution was based on the idea of equality of rights under the law. The second was based on the idea of fraternity equality. And that one led to the French Revolution, led to slaughter and death and upheaval for, it turned Europe upside down. But both of the revolutions were justified.
Right.
Both of them were fighting tyranny.
Right.
Trouble is, you've got to make sure that you're on the right track. You're on the right revolution.
Right. And right now, Jim, you're running for president under the Libertarian Party. How is that going?
I'm seeking the Libertarian Party nomination. The Libertarian Party will select its candidate in May of next year. It's going quite well. I've been I'm not rich, but I have been communicating. I've gotten a whole bunch of email addresses from libertarians, and I've been sending out emails on a regular basis to people. And but the reason I'm running is because I have some ideas that I think might improve the results that libertarians receive. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to outline them just a bit for you, if you wouldn't
sure.
mind.
Oh, no, absolutely. Let's just take a real quick station identification so we can tell everybody how to call in and stuff like that. So we'd like to get some call-ins this morning. Hold on, please.
Sure.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano. We have with us Jim Burns, who's seeking the nomination for the libertarian slot for presidency of the United States. He's going to discuss with him some of his platform. We'd like for you to call in 888-773-4496. And if your question does not directly relate to what we're talking about, that's just fine. 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are always welcome. comments@libertytalkradio.com. By the way, some of you may be listening through Blog Talk Radio platform, and that's 646-652-4620. That number is still alive and kicking, so either number would do well. One kicks over to the other, so it'd be no problem. I pick up the tab, by the way. Okay. All right, Jim. Please continue.
I believe that I've been working on this problem for a very, very long time, and I think that one of the major things we need to do is decide what it is that we need to do to achieve victory. And I believe that what we need to do is we need to win the presidency of the United States, and we need to win 34 United States Senate seats. Now, the reason for this is because the President of the United States is the chief executive officer of the United States. All laws are enforced through the presidency of the United States. All right, that means that when the president is elected, he or she takes an oath, and that oath is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. It's not to do what Congress says. It's not to do what the Supreme Court says. It's to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So just because the Congress has passed a bunch of what it calls laws doesn't mean that the president should enforce them if they don't preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So literally, the president could be, if he were a libertarian, he could stop enforcing all non-libertarian laws and follow the Constitution of the United States. And in so doing, he would, literally, we would win the things that we're trying to achieve. Now, the reason that you need 34 United States senators is that if the president started to do these sorts of things, there is a method that the Congress can use to get rid of the president, and that's impeachment, the impeachment process. And it requires a two-thirds vote of the United States Senate to remove the president from the United States. Now, if we have 34 United States senators, then they couldn't impeach the president of the United States, and he could implement this philosophy. Okay, so that's what we need. Now the question is, how do we go about getting it? And I think that the problem that the Libertarian Party has is we're in a catch-22 situation. You can't get a lot of money in organizers and people to work for your campaign unless you can win, and you can't win unless you have a lot of money in organizers and right. and participants to help you win. So in order to get those, I believe that what the Libertarian Party has to do is to start. Has to take a step back first, and the first thing we need to do is to be able to determine who does win. If we can't win ourselves, is there something we can do to determine the outcome in many elections? And I think that there is, and that's to the reason that people vote for people is because we ask them to. In other words, they go out and they spend money to run advertising to ask people to vote for you or to knock on doors. All right, but if you ask a selective group of people, you'll get more votes from those people than you would get from the people that you don't ask. Right. So many elections are close, so what you do is you ask, if you want the Democrats to win, you ask the Republicans to vote for you, and if you want the Republicans to win, you ask the Democrats to vote
right.
for you.
Right.
And we could do this. The problem is that the Libertarians don't do this. What we do is we just simply run miniature Democrat and Republican campaigns, and we ask hardly anybody to vote for us.
Right.
All right. Now, once you start affecting the outcome of the elections, the way you win the elections is you use the same principles. In other words, you ask selective people to vote for you, but you have to have more money. And the way you get more money is that you show that you're effective,
right.
that you can affect the outcomes of the election so that the you attract people who have more revenue, and if you become competitive, then you can actually win the elections. I outline all these ideas on my website at jimburnsforpresident.com. That's jimburnsforpresident.com. And click on More About Jim Burns, and then you'll I've outlined I have a table of contents, and I try to approach a wide variety of different subjects.
Jim, what do you think about your thoughts about the fact that if you are a candidate, whether it be Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, and you are not a proponent of the Federal Reserve and the military-industrial complex, the entire media system shuts down on you. How do you get around that? Look at Ron Paul. I mean, he can win a straw poll. His name is not even mentioned. I mean, it's egregious. It's beyond ridiculous.
Well, if you take a look at Ron Paul, for example, remember that he was our presidential candidate in 1988.
Correct.
And he got even less. He got even less publicity than he's getting now. If you recall, he ran for president 4 years ago, and he got even less publicity than he's getting now.
Right.
If you'll take a look at what he's getting now, he's getting a whole bunch more now than he's got before.
Correct.
And the reason is because he's showing more in the polls.
Right.
And I believe that it's not so much, I believe that the media is concerned about the horse race and not the human race, if you ask me. They're not really concerned about issues except and how it affects the outcome of the election.
Yeah,
that's why I'm trying to advocate a program where we can affect the outcome of the election and therefore get more media attention.
No, I agree with you. My problem is that even those that don't stand a snowball chance on the equator of winning get infinitely more time than Ron Paul gets. You know, and it seems that he is. I saw one in the newspaper, a bar graph of a straw poll where Ron Paul received, I think, 53% of the votes. The next candidate, I think it was Romney or Perry or one of those at the time, received 12 or 16% of the votes. Now, this is a bar graph, and both bar lines were the exact same size, length. Same length. And they even showed it on the internet. And it was the most amazing thing you've ever seen in your life. You could imagine if that was Romney against Perry, and Romney received 53%, and Perry, that, well, vice versa, received 12 or 15%, and the bars were the same amount, there would have been hell to pay. But yet, no one said a word.
Joe, you put me in an awkward position. You want me to defend the establishment.
Oh, no, and, I don't want you to do that. You know, I just...
I'm not really going to do that, but I would point out that... a lot of Ron Paul supporters are computer sophisticated.
Yeah.
And these polls, especially straw polls, if you look the word straw poll up in the dictionary, you'll find that it's not really a, it doesn't have the same standards that other polls have. So our guys, the good guys in my view, when they set up one of these polls, we figure out ways to win them. So, I wouldn't, because just take a look at what happens when the actual polls go down. The results aren't as well. Now, the deal is that Paul is getting better and better. For example, this straw poll, the last straw poll they did were, what's her name won? Ron Paul came in second, but he came in a close second, and he didn't do nearly as well 4 years ago.
Right.
The thing is, he's raising a lot more money this time, and he has a great deal better organization this time than he had previously. And it's my hope that I don't want to discourage anybody, but I don't believe that Ron Paul's going to get the Republican nomination. If he does not get the Republican nomination, I certainly hope that he would get the he can have it if he wants it, I'm sure, the Libertarian Party nomination.
Right.
And if he does that, well, then he'll be on the ballot in all 50 states, and I'm sure that he can affect the outcome of the election and do a great deal better than the Libertarian Party's ever done before.
No, I agree. I forgot. The thought I had just fell right out of my head. Jim, is this what happens when you get my age? Thoughts fly out of your head. Your skull becomes
porous. Well, I don't know,
something.
Joe. I think I'm probably just as old as you are, and I know that if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
Okay. Hey, we have a couple of callers on the line. You want to take one now, Jim?
Sure.
Okay. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please.
Jim.
Jim. Good morning, Jim. You have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Good morning, Mr. Burns. Pleasure to hear you speak this morning and share your views. Obviously, as you know, there's great odds against you with the establishment and the media in having any third-party candidate gain traction and win an election. So I wanted to ask you, assuming that you are that you win the Libertarian Party nomination in May, you will have about a half a year between of campaign activity before the general election. What are the what do you think strategically and tactically is going to be the most effective way for you to get exposure and get your message out there, again, despite the mainstream media's resistance to entertain third-party candidates? I'm sure limited funding. You have a lot of obstacles, but obviously, it sounds like you'd go at it with great enthusiasm and gusto. So I was wondering if you thought through what your most effective tactics and strategies would be to try to try to bring awareness to you and your issues. And then then in the same vein, what would be your one or two most compelling issues in your platform to try to awaken America to interest in voting for you?
What I would do is several things. Number one, I'd run the same type of campaigns that have been run in the past. They're educational campaigns, and you do it to try to bring people into the Libertarian Party. In other words, to build the party so you can do it better each and every time. But the next thing I'd do is understand that we can't win this time, unless something very, very unusual happens. So what's the next best thing we can do? I think the next best thing we can do is stop President Obama from being reelected. The way to do that is to campaign extensively in the states that are close.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is you, if you want to get more Democrat votes, for example, we use direct mail, and we mail only to Democrats, and we give them good reasons to vote for us. For example, the Social Security system is a Ponzi scheme, and the people under 30 or under 40 know that, and President Obama will not mention that fact, so we would take that issue. The drug issue is another good issue for libertarians, especially to approach liberal Democrats with. Use direct mail. You mail only to Democrats, and you ask them to vote for us because we're the only. Their vote would count to bring forth this issue of decriminalization of drugs. Also, President Obama claimed to be the liberal candidate for president, yet he has maintained Guantanamo, and he's killing more people than George Bush did. I think that we could point this out to Democrats, and the thing about it is we wouldn't have to get a majority of Democrat voters to vote for us. In those key states, just a few, if you'll remember the 2000 election, it was decided by less than 1,000 votes. And can we get 1,000 Democrat votes if we ask people to vote for us in most of those states? And I think that we could. I think that we could affect the outcome of the election. And I don't want President Obama to be reelected.
So you're saying a reality check is that since it's very unlikely that in this coming election that a third party candidate could actually win as president, you'd want to bring awareness to your issues and try to be the spoiler. I guess wasn't Ralph Nader the spoiler for Al Gore in 2004? I think.
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't call it spoiler. What I would call it is seeking selective votes.
Right.
People's votes belong to themselves. They don't belong to the Democrats or the Republicans. And I'm entitled, and as you would be entitled, as anybody's entitled, to ask people to vote for them. And we're also entitled to ask whoever it is we want to vote for us.
Right.
We still have a certain amount of freedom, even though the Federal Election Commission is a tyrannical organization that doesn't achieve the goals that it set out to achieve. Nevertheless, we're still relatively free to ask the people we wish to ask to vote for us. And I would use the terms that we're seeking to affect the outcome of the election.
Good, good. Out of curiosity, do you feel that voting is more a right or an obligation?
Well, I think that voting should not be important. It shouldn't matter who is elected to office. I believe that the government should be so limited that the decisions made by the government, who is in charge, shouldn't matter. I want to have a culture where people live their own lives to the way they want to, so long as they don't harm others.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Jim, it's refreshing to hear your views, and I wish you all the luck in your efforts to win the nomination. And I hope I'll hear and read and see more about you in your campaign efforts. And it's enjoyable to hear you on the broadcast this morning. Thanks so much.
Contact me at jimburnsforpresident.com and email me, and I'll be happy to put you on my list.
Wonderful. I'll do that. Thanks so much. All right.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Well, that was some very interesting questions. I often wonder if, in fact, there is some media bias towards certain candidates based on the position they are taking regarding the military and the Federal Reserve.
Well, there's also bias whoever it is. It used to be in the olden days you could see the bias, like they'd call it the Tulsa Democrat. Well, their bias was for the Democratic Party.
Right.
Or the Tulsa Republican, the Union Telegraph, that type of thing. They would at least let you know what their bias was. All the media is biased. It's a question of everybody who claims to be totally unbiased is pulling your leg. Now, the average, the mass media is, has a tendency to be more biased towards the liberal establishment. And the you noted that I said liberal, but I also added establishment.
Right.
In other words, they favor the military-industrial complex. They favor things as they are, you know. Conservative biased organizations. You'll find more of those on talk radio, and say Fox is more conservatively biased. You have bias no matter who it is. You just have to. Everybody should look at all of the information they will receive with a skeptical eye.
Right. Correct. Yeah. We have another caller on the line. Would you like to take this call also, Jim?
Sure.
Caller, you're on the air. Area code 724. Your first name, please.
Rick.
Rick, yeah. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I do. Mr. Burns, Lou Rockwell published an article last week suggesting that Occupy Wall Street is not the enemy of the Tea Party and probably not the enemy of the libertarians. Got me reading a little bit, and they don't like banks or corporations. So it seems like there's some common ground there. Would you consider an outreach to the Occupy Wall Street people to be a good idea?
Sure.
How would you do it?
As I said before, both the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street have valid grievances. The problem with them is that I think that the Tea Party is much better because they have their solutions are orientated towards reducing the size and scope of government, wherein the Occupy movement is more after they're looking at the result and not the cause. It isn't the Wall Street bankers that are causing these problems. It's the Federal Reserve System and the regulations that are placed and the special advantages that are received by the banks. As to how to approach the Wall Street the occupation people, I'm here in Beatty, Nevada, and I'm poor, so I can't. It's a long way to go to New York. And it's a long way to go even to the, I think the closest one is in L.A. It's an awfully long way to go to those, and I think that, but if you live in those areas, it wouldn't be harmful to pass out libertarian literature, especially literature aimed at the Fed.
It seems to me that it's the amalgam. It's like you mentioned earlier, the military-industrial complex is actually Eisenhower called it originally in one of his drafts the military industrial congressional complex, and it's kind of the banker government amalgam. Trying to say that they're actually separate is probably a mistake, I would think. And if you could maybe connect the Wall Street Occupy Wall Street folks to stop feeding the hand that bites them, they might go over the edge. With that kind of movement, I mean, there's an awful lot of people that are really ticked off. It could do some good. Maybe you could win.
John Stossel recently came up with a phrase that I really like. He calls it crapitalism. And that's what we have right now. We don't have free markets or voluntary exchange. What we have is government granting special privilege to some at the expense of others. They adopt the philosophy. President Obama adopts the philosophy of from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, and that's what he believes in. Now, I don't believe in that, and I don't. And I think that the people on Occupy Wall Street, if you were able to talk to them, some of them would agree with that principle, but some would also agree with the principle that what we really need to do is to make these people honest. And if they engage in gambling, well, they ought to take the loss if they don't make a good bet. And that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is they're setting it up so that they call it crony capitalism. In other words, they receive the profits if they win, but they make the taxpayer pay the penalty if they lose. And that is what has to be stopped. And it's Congress and the president and the courts that need to be reformed.
Well, you certainly won't get an argument from me on that. Way to go, Mr. Okay. Burns. I hope you're successful.
Rick,
well, thank you very much. And look me up at jimburnsforpresident.com.
Rick, may I ask
I'll
you...
Thank you.
Rick, before you hang up, I didn't recognize the area code 724. Which state is that or city?
That's near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in, Rick. Appreciate it very much.
I appreciate you being on the air, sir.
All right. Thank you for listening. There is a feeling or a contention that a candidate has to be for the Federal Reserve, has to be for the military-industrial complex, because those are the people who control really what is going on, controls the media, controls basically everything that's going on. And without their support, there's no way that you're going to win. Somehow something will happen where you won't win. What's your feeling about that, Jim?
Well, sort of like the Invictus thing, it isn't so much the winning and losing. What is really important is that you stand true to your principles.
Right.
And the thing about it is, too, we're not entered in a horse race. If we don't win this time, well, we just keep coming back and we keep coming back. And what we do is we try to expand and expand. We shouldn't look upon it as if it's a all or nothing. I've experienced this a whole bunch. Is that people get really excited. They go out there and they work their little tails off, and then they get 1% of the vote and they quit.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't help us. It helps a little bit, but it doesn't go toward the long-term goal.
Yeah.
You just got to keep going at it and keep going at it and keep going at it. That's the way to win.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. All right, Jim. Our 30 minutes is about up. Would you like to make some closing comments for us?
Well, I would like to say that I believe that people should be allowed to live their lives as they choose, so long as they don't initiate force, threaten to initiate force, or engage in fraud against their fellow human beings. This is that's the fundamental principle that I believe in, and I believe that this is not radical. It's not shocking. It's the way that the vast majority of us live the vast majority of our lives. And when we don't, when we fall off that wagon, when we start initiating force against people, there's a word for that behavior, and it's criminal. The reason that libertarianism is so important to our culture is that it makes it possible for us to live in peace with each other. And peace brings prosperity and progress. And I think that what we need is a more positive world, and I think that libertarianism is what will bring it to us. And, Joe, I'd like to thank you very much for having me on, and I hope you'll have me back.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to ask you if you would accept that invitation to return.
Okay, well, I'll get in contact with you about it.
Oh, yeah, please do. And especially as we get closer and closer, and, of course, if you win the nomination, then we'd love to have you back then as well, okay?
Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you, Jim. You've been a great guest. Appreciate it very much. Good night. Good morning, rather. Good night. Bye-bye.
All right.
Oh, boy. You know, sometimes I just say the goofiest things, and I don't know. There's something wrong with my brain or something like that. It just doesn't work very well. And I can't seem to get anything to work here. Here we go.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective, not always palatable.
There's something wrong with my computer here.
Gotta be careful.
Just blew someone's ears off. Well, there is someone on still online, but they didn't press the one button, and we hope that you enjoy the program. This is the end of today's program, and we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.